Welcome to Fantasy Focus. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And you can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, December 29th. It's Matthew Berry's birthday, and he has a very well-deserved day off. So instead, you're stuck with me, Field, plus my Clay, Daniel, and you are never stuck with Stefania Bell, who is gracious enough to bless us with her presence. Good morning to all of you. Stefania, how are you over there?
I'm okay. I thought you were making a little jab at me for like scooting in under the wire, just making it here on time for the show.
No, I'm immune to people getting here like within a minute of the show starting because Matthew does it every day. So.
I know, but you've also been up, I mean, since what, 3 in the morning doing radio since 6 a.m.?
Yeah, for anybody who wants to listen to the Key J and Max show in the mornings, I'll be there for the next few mornings, including this morning. Wow. So I am tired.
Extra training for, you know, when you have to be up in the middle of the night?
That's a good point. It is unintentional training, And I've also been spending a lot of time exchanging dad jokes with Mike Clay, which has been a very useful exercise. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm kind of wondering what Matthew's up to on his birthday. What do you think he does?
This would be a great time for Stefania to go on some sort of rant about how Matthew is the one that is currently on some sort of boondoggle around the world. Do you want to take this opportunity, Stefania?
I know. He really is. Thank you, Field. I think Matthew is, you know, off on his yacht. He has several. You know, right. He likes to poo-poo it like I'm the one with the yachts, but really, Matthew, he has a boating license. If you really want to be nervous, Matthew can actually drive a boat. Somebody allowed him to do that. So he's probably driving a boat down in Florida somewhere. Margaritas going on, and it's not even noon.
Oh, he is at least a quarter of a margarita deep already, which means he's very, very buzzed right now.
He has to take a nap, you know, Field. He's getting up there.
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point.
Field, I know we said a whole bunch of stuff at the end of the show, but not everyone listens every day.
That's true. That's a good point.
And so if it's okay, I would just like to say as a part of Matthew's birthday, I know that we are all actually, we make so much fun of Matthew. So much fun of Matthew.
So easy.
And he is such a great sport about it, but we love him so much, and he has done so much for all of us as a part of being able to just be here at ESPN, be a coworker of ours, and influence our lives and our careers. And so, Matthew, I love you so much. I don't know why I'm talking to him. It's not like he listens to the podcast.
No, I don't know.
Whatever.
Matthew's assistant.
Now is your chance.
We love Matthew so much. Please pass this along to him.
Yesterday when he was here, we told him we loved him. We said all this stuff to his face. Now that he's gone, go for it.
You can say anything.
Get your dings in.
I saw that. I was thinking maybe he texted you or something, or pulled you aside and told you had to say something nice because you were the one cracking jokes during that nice dedication by Field yesterday. So I assume you had to.
I just not everyone listens to every show. And in case people didn't know that today's Matthew's birthday, I wanted to make sure that they knew that the legend was off today for a reason.
Yesterday were our probably heartier remarks, longer remarks because of the time we have today. But I will just say very, very quickly, and this is something that people ask frequently what it's like to work with Matthew. And the one thing I can always tell them is that in this massive sea of people that are covering fantasy football, where I'm not saying that we agree on every single thing, but there are a lot of people that have comparable thoughts and opinions and analysis coming into the season. There weren't a bunch of people that had, you know, Joe Burrow as the number one quarterback in their rankings coming into the season, as an example. A lot of people had, you know, Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, somebody like that, right? What has always made Matthew so special is his ability to say things that even if others were saying those same things in a way that is more entertaining and insightful and funny and enjoyable than others. He's just got a unique energy about him. It's why he is the fantasy goat. We are all very, very, very fortunate to have the opportunity to call Matthew a colleague, but much more importantly, a friend.
Please send him a birthday, which is at Matthew Berry TMR.
Yeah. I think he's trying to work on his TikTok the most. So please go to TikTok, which I saw was the most visited website other than the Fantasy Focus live stream on the entire internet.
Wow, that's incredible. It might be entertaining today since he is maybe halfway through that margarita on vacation. Maybe he's posting some good stuff.
TikTok might improve substantially.
Gotta keep an eye out. Keep an eye on that feed today.
Liable for any kind of content after a half a marg.
I love it.
All right, we have a lot to get to today, and we're going to try our best to do a Friday show on a Wednesday, which we know is sort of a fleeting exercise, but Stefania is going to give us as much information as she can. Before we get to injuries, though, Stefania, there was a significant development in the NFL yesterday pertaining to COVID-19 protocols, and it kind of mirrors where our country is headed with the new CDC guidelines.
Yeah, Field, that's true. You know, the CDC modified their guidelines to reflect a quarantine time, essentially, after a positive diagnosis, and saying that the time frame could change from 10 days to 5 days. The reason that matters, the NFL and NFLPA have followed CDC guidelines when constructing their protocols. And as a result, when the CDC changed, the NFL and NFLPA agreed to change as well. And we put a graphic up there because I wanted you to see the wording of a couple of things that's very specific. These updated health and safety protocols, as far as return from quarantine, are for both vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals. So keep that in mind. And it's a 5 day having passed since you, the individual involved, tested positive for COVID-19. That is when that individual will be eligible to return. So 5 days have to have passed since the specimen was collected, if you will. And so if you do the math, for example, somebody who had a test that was gathered on December 27th could be eligible to return on January 1st.
So 5 days plus 24 hours with no fever symptoms, and all your other symptoms have resolved.
Right.
Those are the updates.
The fever symptoms have to have resolved, and you can't be on fever reducing medications. Okay. And you have to basically be symptom free for 24 hours. That includes open coughing, et cetera. Okay. So, you know, we talked about how they were relaxing some things, but they were still asking players to report symptoms, and they really are being stringent about reporting any type of symptom whatsoever so they can then differentiate with a COVID test.
Well, Stefania, these are pertinent really for the rest of the season and certainly for all teams, but this news was especially pertinent yesterday on the heels of Carson Wentz being placed on the COVID-19 list, as Wentz has been open about his unvaccinated status. The Colts quarterback now has at least a shot to play on Sunday, which, if the previous rules had remained in place, he would have automatically been out against the Raiders.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he had really acknowledged that he remained unvaccinated relatively recently. So it came up in a different conversation. So everyone was very much aware of his status. And initially, when the news was reported that he had been placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, the assumption by myself and others was that he would be out, because at that point in time, it was still a 10-day mandatory quarantine for the unvaccinated player. And as you noted, the rules changed immediately after that. I will say that Sam Ehlinger, who is the backup to Carson Wentz, should he need to, you know, should Carson Wentz be symptomatic and should he not clear in time for the game? Sam Ehlinger, remember during the preseason, Carson Wentz had a foot injury that kept him out quite a bit. Sam Ehlinger was their primary backup, and he's been taking the mental reps alongside of him throughout the season. He had a knee injury late in the preseason. Some people might wonder if he was recovered from that. He has fully recovered, and that is who would be in line to take the reins if Carson Wentz can't play.
So I would encourage everybody that can to watch fantasy football now on Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern time, at which point we'll have clarity on Carson Wentz's status. I think a lot of you who listen to this show have access or frequently use social media. My guess is that you'll have the information on Carson Wentz before Sunday's fantasy football now. Check the Twitter feeds of a variety of different NFL reporters, including Mike Wells, NFL. Does a great job covering the Colts for us here at ESPN. Mike, just briefly, if Carson Wentz is out, does that mean you'd be sitting Michael Pittman as a result of it?
I wouldn't sit him. You know, even with the backup in there, I mean, he has 8 or more targets in 3 straight. They're trying, like, the offense has made an adjustment to try and feature him each and every game. I don't think that'll change. You're more concerned for sure, but on the other hand,
did he have 8 targets against the Patriots when he got kicked out early, or no?
A full game, sorry.
Okay,
sorry. Plus full games, right? Not including the one he was ejected.
Man, that would have been really been impressive. Night.
Yeah, to my point, he's heavily targeted, right? No, not in that one. Talking full games, so good call there. But, you know, this is a team that's already not throwing the ball a lot, right? They're very run heavy. That's not going to change anyway, and he's already seeing that sort of volume. And you would expect the game to be more competitive, or them trailing without Carson Wentz, which could perhaps put Pittman in a position to be seeing targets in the second half. So I would still feel like even if we're downgrading him, he's still a starter.
Before we get to some players that were really good last week and whether we can trust them for this week, I want to ask Mike about the potential of Trey Lance starting on Sunday for the 49ers. Really interesting player, and I think there's just so much that can be gleaned from what happens over the next couple of weeks, because this could be a glimpse into the future of the 49ers, Mike. From a pure fantasy perspective, would you feel comfortable putting Trey Lance in as your starter in championship weeks?
Well, I'd definitely be a little anxious for sure, you know, with a you know, there's excitement, but there's risk with the unknown, right? Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I look back at what we've seen from him so far, right? And definitely gives you reason for optimism that he can be one of those guys that does enough with his legs to be a top 12 or top 10 fantasy quarterback, right? So he came in against Seattle, played half a game, right? Yeah. Only half the game, 49% of the snaps, threw for 2 touchdowns and had 41 rushing yards at 20 fantasy points. Pretty good for a half of a game, right? Yeah. And then he started the next week. Now, this was week 5 against Arizona. At that point, they were playing elite defense. J.J. Watt was healthy. Everyone else was there. They were crushing it defensively. 192 passing yards. Did not throw a touchdown, but he had 16 carries for 89 yards in that game. 11 of the 16 were designed runs. So only 5 scrambles. They were setting up that offense for him to run the football. Had 15 fantasy points. Nothing crazy. But again, it was a really tough matchup. So I have him QB12. Houston's defensive efficiency against quarterbacks has not been very good. You know, they don't face a lot of volume because they're behind a lot. Teams can run against them, but not a defense you're scared of at all. So yes, I definitely think with what he can do with his legs and his athleticism and raw skills that he is a fringe QB one.
Will be really interesting to watch. It certainly sounds like it is heading that direction for the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Final word will probably come by Friday afternoon, but it seems unlikely that Jimmy Garoppolo will be available. So last week, week 16, we had a lot of players that came out of nowhere and had really, really good performances. And the question is whether we can trust them again this week. Perhaps none more so than Rex Burkhead, who had a career day for the Houston Texans against the Los Angeles Chargers. He had 149 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns. He's always been a good quality football player, Mike. Mm-hmm. Never been like a super duper star, but always been a good, useful piece, whether he's with the Bengals, the Patriots, other stops along the way in his career. This was the best we've ever seen him. Now he plays against San Francisco on Sunday. Do you think last week was a little bit of a byproduct of the fact that the Chargers, seemingly, objectively speaking, are the worst run defense in the NFL? Is that what happened last week? They just, the perfect matchup?
I mean, not to mention all the people out, too.
Yeah, and the COVID absences. Right. But the Texans were down 5 of their week 1 starting offensive, not a single week 1 starting offensive lineman played last week, and they still dominated them. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we talk all the time about volume is king, right? Chase volume. And Burkhead's been one of the guys who's frustrating, certainly frustrating me from a projection standpoint, right? Because I run the projections and I say, all right, he's getting 55% of the carries and 10% of the targets every week. And almost anyone who gets that's going to be an RB2 at worst, right? I mean, that's a decent share of the workload.
Sure.
And he just continued to average 2.5 yards per carry, no efficiency, no touchdowns. It was extremely disappointing. Finally, that volume turned into a big game here in a good matchup. But can we count on it going forward? I have a hard time believing that. I mean, look, he had 28.9 fantasy points in this game. His prior 5 games combined, and that goes back to when he took over as basically their lead back, 34 points total in those 5 games. You know, the volume has been respectable, but the efficiency has been really bad. And again, you're going against the 49ers here. Mid-pack against running backs, they've led the 8th most touchdowns. But their efficiency against running backs has been outstanding. Bottom 5 in yards per carry and yards per target against that position, right? So it is a very tough matchup. To your point, quite the opposite of last week, right? When you're going up against the beat-up Chargers defense. So I'm going to say no here. I don't trust it. You can put them on the flex radar for sure. If you're kind of, maybe you lost Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I have that situation in 2 leagues this week. Maybe you're in a tough spot. You could throw him in there and hope he finds the end zone once and gets 15 touches, fine. But anything close to this past week, no.
I'm with you as well. I'd have a hard time feeling super comfortable starting him, but I will say this. I'm impressed by what Houston is doing right now. You have my attention, Houston Texans. Mike, I know you've been a fan of Rashad Penny for quite some time. He's been a fun prospect to watch. He probably was overdrafted. I think that's, at this point, quite obvious. But he was a good player coming out of college, just drafted a round or two too early. Health has really been an issue for him, but recently he's played a lot, and he's produced. He was awesome again this past week against Chicago. He had 135 rushing yards and a touchdown. Now he plays against Daniel's Lions on Sunday. Are you confident that he could be a starter in your lineup?
Yeah, I think so. And the thing about Penny is throughout his career, this has been the story, right? He has been super efficient as a runner his whole career. It's just injury after injury after injury. If he was just healthy, we might be having a different conversation. We might say, all right, I understand why they spent that pick. You know, I mean, it's you know, it's a different discussion to talk about if running backs are worth first round picks, which the answer is pretty much always no.
Yep.
But nonetheless, he has been effective when called upon. But look at this. I mean, he's only playing half the snaps, right? Over the last 3 weeks, he's played roughly 50% of the snaps in every game. He's first in the NFL in rushing yards and second at running back in fantasy points. So that just shows you how the advantage he has taken of those touches. 5.5 yards per carry leads the NFL. or 5.5 yards per carry, which is near the top of the league. And then he's averaging 3.1 yards after contact per attempt. That is best in the entire NFL. So even when he gets hit early on behind that line, he is making plays. If there's a drawback here, Field, it's he only has 5 targets this season.
Correct, yeah.
Right? He's a rusher. He's not doing much in the passing game, but it is a good matchup. Going up against Detroit, 7th most fantasy points to running backs, most overexpected. They've allowed 23 touchdowns to running backs.
Unbelievable.
This season.
And it's just remarkable. Like, one thing you can say about the Seahawks is they are dedicated to how they want to play offense, right? Like, they're going to want to ground and pound. Pete Carroll is many things. I would say that committed to the running game is certainly one of them. I've got him at running back 20, so a little bit more optimistic than you, Mike, but I understand the concerns because of the lack of passing game usage. Good player, though. Good, happy for him. Happy for him.
Me too, yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Because this feels like a trap game. I'm looking at, as a Lions fan, right, I've been watching them a whole bunch, and I have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf in 2 different leagues. But I definitely feel like Rashad Penny is, I've watched the Lions run defense. It's poor. So I feel very comfortable starting him. Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that you would get cute and potentially not start a guy like DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett this week, given Russell Wilson's struggles? Thank you. That's all I want to hear you say. But like, I'm just curious.
Tyler Lockett, I would start. DK Metcalf, I could think about it.
Tyler Lockett feels like you should
be. He's getting the air yards, and he caught the long touchdown last week. And the matchup's great. I mean, as you know, are we talking about them in receiver cornerback matchups?
We are not. Wow.
Okay, so
I looked ahead.
So check this out. The 2 years ago, the Lions, just really quick, the Lions drafted Will Harris, right? As a safety, basically. Yep. The goal was for him to play safety, and he's been like their third safety. He's played, started some games. This year, they've been so shaky at corner, they made him at times are like, all right, we're going to put you in the slot. You're a primary slot corner for a few weeks. Then A.J. Parker comes back, and they're like, now you're number one perimeter corner, right? He shadowed Russell Gage last week. Like, he is their number one guy. And then they have Melifonwu on the other side, a rookie who's barely played the season. That's their perimeter corners right now. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are the primary outside receivers for Seattle. So it's a really good matchup. I'd be really hard-pressed to find a replacement there.
Okay, we'll see. Maybe some people do have options that have been good so far this year or good recently. I'm just making this up as an example. Amon-Ra St. Brown, you pick him off the waiver wire, you might be playing him over somebody like DK Metcalf.
That's fair.
But perhaps the opportunity is just too good for this entire Seahawks offense. Hey, Devin Singletary has been good recently. He has emerged as the Bills' primary back, Mike. I think the reason why people are a bit skeptical, though, is that the Bills have had small commitments. Like, they've dated players in their backfield before, but never gotten married to them as the guy. Do we think we've reached the point where Devin Singletary is the guy in the backfield for the rest of the season?
Well, like you said, they've been dating this one for 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 70% or more of the snaps in 3 straight games are starting to build up a trend. And the most recent game included Zach Moss, right? He actually played in that game last week. He dabbled in. There was an entire goal line series where Zach Moss was the back, and yet still over 70% of the snaps for Devin Singletary. It has worked out from a fantasy perspective, at least in terms of a high floor, 14 plus fantasy points in 3 straight as a touchdown in back-to-back games as well. You know, this is a pass heavy, but an extremely productive, high scoring Buffalo Bills offense. They still need wins. So I definitely think he'll remain plenty involved, and he's a good passing down back. So it makes sense that he's involved with them throwing the ball so much. By the way, Falcons 9th most fantasy points and 8th most touchdowns to running backs this season. So a plus matchup. Lots of opportunity. He should be in lineups.
Yeah, I feel the same way as well. Buffalo plays their final 2 games at home. I suspect they'll win both of them to finish 11-6 this regular season. We're going to talk about wide receiver and cornerback matchups, which, of course, Mike writes every single week for ESPN+. But we'd be remiss on this show to not mention that one of our beloved colleagues at ESPN, Jeff Dickerson, who covered the Bears for our ESPN NFL Nation, succumbed to his battle with colon cancer yesterday. He's 44 years old, and I think all of us probably have some level of interaction or memory of JD, and we could probably all spend a lot more than just a couple of minutes here reflecting upon the person he was, but it's an entirely too sad story. JD was incredibly kind and positive in the face of adversity, and as if it was not sad enough to lose JD, an amazing person and a fighter in every sense of the word, JD lost his own wife, Caitlin, to a battle with lymphoma just 2 years ago. It's heartbreaking. It's soul-crushing. The words probably don't even begin to describe just how sad it is. His son, Parker, is 11 years old. He'll have to power forward without both of his parents, which just breaks your heart in so many ways. And if you have it in you, if you can go check on Twitter, there is a GoFundMe link. There's no amount too small, too large to help hopefully enrich the life of Parker somehow, some way going forward. We're going to miss the heck out of Jeff Dickerson. He was an amazing reporter, certainly somebody that brought it every single day on the Bears beat, but much more importantly, a great husband, a great father, and a great friend. We're all going to miss him like crazy, Mike.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well said. I don't know what else I can add there other than saying that I've had some brief interactions with him, and he's just an awesome guy. And all you have to do really is go on social and just read all the dedications from the people who knew him best. Yeah. What a guy. I mean, it's heartbreaking, I feel, for his family and his son, certainly. So do what you can, but, you know, hug your loved ones close for sure.
It's fine. I know you knew JD and had a good relationship with a great person.
Yeah, this is hard. You know, Jeff was so kind to me in the early days of my reaching out to beat writers who really do prop me up everywhere around the country that they are. They are my eyes and ears at the field for the teams that they cover. And Jeff was always generous with his reporting and sharing information and just like you already said so well, Field. I mean, just every interaction with him was so positive. And I would encourage you to check out Courtney Cronin's writings. Courtney, who covers the Vikings for us, is up there in the same division with him. And she said, you know, Jeff opened the door for her to do radio, which she is hosting today. And talking about Jeff's life and legacy. And really, she laid out the difference between just being a coworker and being a true teammate. And I think that to me really resonated because that's how so many of us viewed Jeff. And also Kevin Seifert put together a very nice piece on Jeff Dickerson that you can read on ESPN.com. And, you know, we lost Vaughn McClure already. Vaughn McClure, who formerly covered the Bears and then was down covering the Atlanta Falcons. And it was Jeff who served as the MC for Vaughn's foundation fundraiser this year while he was fighting his own battle with cancer. If that doesn't tell you what kind of person he was, nothing will. So we miss them both terribly. But hopefully they're high-fiving each other upstairs somewhere.
Absolutely. I got lucky enough to work with Jeff a handful of times when I first started at ESPN because I did a whole bunch with the NFL Nation reporters before I got to work with everybody else that I've been working with the last couple of years. And so it was a ton of fun to be able to work with all of them. And Jeff was always just so much fun, a blast to work with. He was super nice about it. And it's heartbreaking that he was only 44 years old. And I feel like it's just another reminder that every day that we have is a gift. Yeah. And, you know, everything we have is so precious and you never know what's going to happen. And we're absolutely going to miss him.
We're going to miss him like crazy. It's such a sad story. Last thing I'll say is just that I recall the last conversation I had with JD, which actually wasn't that long ago. And, you know, it was amazing because probably if there was anybody who deserved to feel bad for himself, it was probably him. You lose your wife, you fight your own battle. And I will never forget this conversation. I was out with my, he called me, I was out walking my dog, and I remember coming back, talking to my wife and just being like, you know something? Someone else is going through things that are a lot harder than what we're dealing with right now in our day-to-day lives. And his perspective helped change my perspective, and it was important at that time. It's something that I'll remember going forward, that perspective in life is essential. Jeff always carried great perspective, and JD will certainly be missed here at ESPN. 44 years old, gone far, far too soon. We'll honor JD by continuing to enjoy every moment that we get in this world. And I know JD would love nothing more than for us to continue to do what we love on a day-to-day basis in the same way that he loved football and we do. And so there's really no easy way to move on from that to the next portion of our show, but we're going to try our best. And as I mentioned, Mike Clay writes the wide receiver and cornerback matchup column every single week on ESPN.com. The premise of it is very simple. Mike tells you which wide receivers stand to benefit because of their matchups and which might be hindered because of their matchups. And the wide receiver cornerback segment of this podcast is brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. Mike, we have a very, very important game in the NFC between the Cowboys and the Cardinals. What does this mean for the Cowboys wide receivers on Sunday?
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot here, right? Robert Alford went on IR and the Cardinals have kind of suffered. Like, he's been kind of solid for a guy that's missed the past couple of seasons. We thought that might be an edge, a matchup plus for the opponent. But as Arizona's defense has struggled as of late, beat and Alford going down, it's kind of fallen apart in the secondary for them. So we're talking Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup on the outside, CeeDee Lamb in the slot, all of these guys upgraded here. Against you have the rookie Marco Wilson, who was actually injured last week. It's not 100% he's even going to play, so yeah, they might have to go back up there. Antonio Hamilton and Byron Murphy, those are right now your three top corners. And again, we'll keep an eye on Wilson. But here's the numbers. Arizona, sixth most fantasy points allowed to receivers now this season, second most over the last month, sixth most to the slot and the perimeter over the past 4 weeks. So obviously, they have given up a ton to that position, and now you're going up against maybe the best wide receiver trio in the NFL right now. As I mentioned, you have Cooper and Gallup on the outside, Lamb inside. They're going to see at least some share against all of these corners, right? And again, with the struggles, the injuries, you all added up. It's a very, very good matchup. So if you have those guys, I mean, I know they've been kind of dicey this year.
Yeah.
You know, Lamb's been pretty good. Cooper's been up and down. Gallup hasn't been very hot as of late, as one touchdown this year. It's tough, but you can at least feel a little bit better firing them up.
Interesting. I think there's some lessons like I'm learning. I'm trying to make sure I capture them and keep them in a safe space for next August when we're going through the same exercise of projecting for the season as well. And I see Lamb's been solid, no doubt. And he's got a really bright future, right? But I think what happens to me sometimes during the preseason is I get too attached to the wow plays and not focused in on the stuff that, like, every single snap, what are you doing, right? Because you wanted to find a CeeDee Lamb highlight this past summer, just search Twitter. You're going to get 20 of them, right? But I think what we're realizing is the consistency is going to be the key for CeeDee Lamb. Some careless drops this year, going up for a ball with one hand as opposed to two. That's going to unlock superstardom for CeeDee Lamb. And this Cowboys team, probably because in part they have three wide receivers as opposed to just two or really just one star player, and the fact that they weren't that good offensively for a stretch in the middle of the season, has made them more difficult to predict. I think if you have Lamb and Cooper, the plan is to just start them and hope for the good, but understand based off this year that, like, it's not always a guarantee, but it's a good matchup at least.
Yeah, and he has been pretty good, by the way. You know, we all pretty much ranked him as a fringe or wide receiver one, and he's been that despite that offense. It's still high pace, still high volume, not as dominant as we expected. It's come around here and there.
Sure.
He's been fine. And
this is more about my own hope that, like, hey, I thought there's a chance he could, like, break out as wide receiver one amongst all wide receivers this year.
I totally get that. Maybe next year. I mean, Michael Gallup might not be there too. So it might be two guys featured. It could be Tony Pollard as their lead back. We don't know. Things are going to change. Dalton. It could be Lamb one, Cooper two, Schultz three.
Right.
And Pollard, you know, that could be the framework of their offense next year. So
we'll Schultz see is a free agent too, by the way.
What's that?
Schultz is a free agent as well.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, so it could be Michael Gallup would look great next to Amon-Ra St. Brown in Detroit.
He would. That is my New Year's resolution, is that Michael Gallup gets traded to the Detroit Lions.
There you go. Everybody wants him. You know, Eagles fan, obviously everybody
Jaguars,
wants him.
Jaguars, Eagles, Philly. Lions, everyone.
What are the Eagles going to do with him? You guys don't know how to do anything with wide receivers. Wow.
Listen, you're not wrong.
Well, they do. You know what they do? The Eagles
escape so easily.
The Eagles do know what to do with cornerbacks, as they have an excellent one in Darius Slay. And on Sunday, he faces off against Terry McLaurin again, Mike. And Terry's such a tough one, right?
Because
he's such a good player, but he's been undone by sometimes difficult matchups, sometimes injuries, and also quarterback play this year.
Yeah, so And
every other year, for that matter.
No doubt, so Darius Slay signed with was traded to the Eagles before last season. He seems to have played three times since that point. Slay is shadowed Terry McLaurin in all three of those games. If you look at McLaurin's receiving lines in those games, not so good. Not so good. 5 for 61 in the first game last year. 7 for 41. No touchdowns in either one of those games. And then this year, earlier this season, 2 for 51.
Okay.
He hasn't scored a touchdown in either of those three games since Slay joined the Eagles. When they played in week 15, he ran 22 perimeter routes. Slay was on him on 100%. Sometimes it's like 18 of 22 or something. You know, there's a couple plays are off the field every single play. That should certainly make you nervous. You look at other shadows this season from Darius Slay: DJ Moore, 5 for 42. Mike Evans, 2 for 27. Henry Ruggs, 4 for 24. Mike Williams, 2 for 58. Elijah Moore had the best game actually against him, 6 for 77 and a touchdown. Obviously, you have that one exception. Otherwise, he's been outstanding in this zone-heavy scheme this season. The Eagles overall, by the way, just dominant against receivers all year long. Jonathan Gannon has done a terrific job on that side of the ball. Second fewest fantasy points to receiver, second fewest to the perimeter, third fewest to the slot. Just across the board, they have been terrific against that position. Even guys against Steven Nelson haven't been as good as they were early in the season when we used to pick on that side of the field. So I want to avoid Washington's receivers across the board if I can. I mean, they're rotating the second guy. You don't want to be messing around there anyway.
Yep.
Right? You have guys in and out. And then McLaurin, I mean, I still have him ranked like as a a wide mid-range wide receiver three, but if I have a better option, I would go that direction.
Eagles turned things around. Remember the perspective people were sharing on the coaching staff earlier this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't forget it.
I won't forget it.
Big scheme change around midseason.
Receipts.
Yeah, yeah. Around midseason, they made a big scheme change. I mean, look, very young, new coaching staff with all new players learning on the fly with everything else going on this offseason. They started slow. And to their credit, they made adjustments, significant adjustments. And it's been, I mean, they're playing well. The schedule's been easy. I get that. But they have done a really nice job adjusting and improving as this year has gone on in a lot of areas. So we'll see what they can do. We'll see what they can do going forward here.
You don't choose who you play on the schedule, right? So they've taken advantage of the schedule, and hopefully they continue to do so and have a chance to make the playoffs. That would certainly make Mike very happy. Yep. The Rams have plenty of wide receivers. Of course, Cooper Kupp being the best, Odell Beckham Jr., who has really settled in nicely recently, and then Van Jefferson. And on Sunday, Mike, they travel to Baltimore to play the Ravens, who are about as decimated of a defense as you can recall in quite some time.
Yeah, I feel bad for John Harbaugh because he's done such a good job getting his teams to overachieve over the years.
Yeah.
And you just get to a point this year where you're like, he can't, it's not his fault. Like, what are you going to do with this situation? It's a mess.
They're doing a good job, to be honest with you.
What's that?
They're doing a good job considering the factors.
They're still hanging right in that division. They may make the playoffs. It's unreal. So just decimated. I'm not going to go through every name like we do every single week where they've lost, you know, Peters and Humphrey can go on and on. But last week, obviously, they hit rock bottom in terms of what they had available due to COVID and injuries. And the Bengals wide receivers took major advantage. Just the receivers, not even the whole game, just the receivers had 404 yards and 3 touchdowns and 80 fantasy points alone. That's obviously they just crushed it. And now the Rams are in a very similar position. They're going to face very similar players. Chris Westry should be back from the COVID list. I think he may have been activated actually yesterday. He'll be back up. But again, he's a backup now that's playing full-time snaps. Tavon Young will be in the slot. Anthony Averick had a chest injury. He may not even play. So now they might be going to Kevon Seymour there at that spot. So Baltimore, fifth most fantasy points to receivers, the most to the perimeter this season. They're the worst in these categories overall and against the perimeter over the last 4 weeks. Again, you have Beckham Jr. and Jefferson on the outside. You have Cooper Kupp in the slot, who's been crushing it. Nobody can cover him, even with standout corners. All of these guys were upgrading them big time. It could be another big time performance. I mean, the Rams are traveling to Baltimore. That's a tough commute.
Early game now, too.
Early game.
They moved the game up from 4:25 to 1 on Monday.
That is tough, and maybe there's a little bit of a trap element from that regard. And obviously, we know Baltimore's well coached. Maybe they bounce back a little bit, but on paper, outstanding matchup.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going to happen with the quarterbacks, but I do think if Lamar plays, which I have no idea if he will or won't, it's still the beginning of the practice week, but you can see a big emotional moment on Sunday. If this team playing at home with Lamar Jackson coming back, you can see them finding a way to kind of slow that game down a little bit to maybe neutralize the Rams' high-powered attack.
And they need a win bad to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, very, very bad.
They have to win games.
Yep. Yeah. I'm going to ask you about the Chargers against the Broncos in just a second here, but quickly, Stefania, Mike Williams, a player we know is unvaccinated, but because of these no protocols, sounds like he now has a chance to be available on Sunday.
Right. You make a good point, which is that these new provisions are retroactive to players who are already on the list.
Mm-hmm. So he is, we know his vaccination status. We do not know the vaccination status of Jalen Guyton, but again, assuming he's asymptomatic, if he is asymptomatic, which the NFL has said the overwhelming majority of players are dealing with minimal or no symptoms. So hopefully most of these guys are able to make it back within 5 days. We could potentially have them available. Mike, let me ask you about the matchup against the Broncos, who have a lot of talent in that secondary. Tough one here for the Chargers, you think, or what?
Yeah, it is. Broncos, eighth fewest fantasy points to wide receivers, right? Okay. So they've been really good. We knew on paper coming into the season they had a very talented secondary. Kyle Fuller actually hasn't worked out, but all in all, they have played pretty well on that side of the football. So you're going to see Ronald Darby on the outside with Patrick Surtain, the impressive rookie, and Bryce Callahan in the slot. It's a really talented group, and the production has been there. So definitely nervous about that. But, you know, again, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on Mike Williams because Josh Palmer, you know, we're going to talk about him on the DFS show here in a little bit. He's been good when he's given an opportunity. There's only been 2 games where he's played more than two-thirds of the offensive snaps, 5 for 66 and a touchdown, and 5 for 43 and a touchdown. It's a very high-scoring, pass-heavy, high-volume offense. If he's in position to be their number 2, which he would be if Williams is out, He's going to be a wide receiver three at worst, and certainly a value play in DFS. Jalen Guyton, by the way, quick note, if he's back and Williams is not, still a little nervous about him. He has a touchdown in three straight games, but had zero in his prior 21 games. And he only had nine targets in those three games where he scored. So you're kind of betting on a big play, which is always the case with Guyton, right? You're always kind of hoping for a big play. But again, he didn't score 21 straight games before this this recent run. So not as I guess my what I'm trying to say is here, it's Keenan Allen lineup lock. If Williams is out, I'm going Palmer over Guyton for sure.
Let's move forward to a couple more players who actually already faced teams that they are facing again this Sunday. The rematch portion of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. And we begin with Kirk Cousins and the Packers and the Vikings traveled to play the Packers on Sunday night in Green Bay. All the way back in week 11, Mike, Kirk Cousins lit the Packers up. He was awesome. 25.2 fantasy points. Part of a really strong start to the season for Kirk Cousins. He has not been nearly as effective recently. You concerned about Sunday night?
A little bit. You mentioned it. He's QB9 for the season. Yep. Right. Had the really big first game at the Packers, but he's been under 17 fantasy points in four of his last five games. So that's to your point. Obviously a little bit of concern there. I will say this. The Packers have, and again, part of this is teams throw at them a lot, right? I mean, the Packers have win most of their games. Teams are always trailing them. They have to throw the football in the second half. But they've allowed the 10th most fantasy points to quarterbacks this season, as well as the 6th most touchdowns. So when teams are throwing, they are actually finding the end zone through the air. 27 touchdowns allowed to opposing quarterbacks this season. So I have Cousins QB 13. You know, I think he's a fringe QB 1. Yep. If you need to stream him this week with everything on the line, fine. I get it. But I do have 12 guys ahead, so he's not necessarily a lineup lock.
This game is really important for Minnesota on Sunday night, and I have absolutely no feel what level they're going to bring. I mentioned this stat a couple of days ago where they have played 12 straight one-score games, which is tied for the NFL record within the course of a single season. Now, it's worth noting that, as an example, that Bears game where Justin Fields scored threw a touchdown in the last play with time expiring.
But still,
made it a one-score game. But still, it's kind of a funny, quirky stat. We'll see what Kirk Cousins and the Vikings have against the Packers on Sunday night.
It is time to go for two, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer, with a pair of running backs facing a defense for the second time this season, Field Yates.
That is correct. We begin with Najee Harris and the Steelers, who play the Cleveland Browns on Monday night. What a fun game that'll be. Two teams that still have a shot. I don't know how often this happens, but all four teams in the AFC North can still win the division as we enter week 17. Mike, it's not always pretty. As a matter of fact, it's rarely pretty for the Steelers offensively, but Najee's volume has just been too good, and he's been producing. At least he produced this past week, I should say, against Kansas City.
Yeah, and he produced against Cleveland when they played the first time, right? 29 touches, 120 yards, and a touchdown in that game. So the efficiency, not great, but when you get 29 touches, who cares? I mean, obviously you're going to probably get to 100 yards, maybe score a touchdown, and that's exactly what he did. Harris, I mean, again, you could pick apart his efficiency all season long. It's been in a tough spot. We knew coming in the offensive line was going to be a trouble spot for them this year, but he has 9 top 12 fantasy weeks. Yeah. That's only Jonathan Taylor has more, so he's still delivered from a fantasy perspective. Check this out. He leads the running back position in snaps, routes, touches, targets. He's third in yards. I mean, I just said a bunch of categories. He's ahead of Jonathan Taylor, and you wouldn't have think that, right? Touches and snaps. I mean, this guy is just a full-time presence on the field, and he's been very productive. The Browns' 10th fewest fantasy points allowed to running back, so maybe a little bit of a below-average matchup, but, you know, and really neutral, if we're being honest. So I have him RB4. You know, he's in line for another big game.
Sometimes it's not just how, it's how many, right? And for him, it's how many, and the volume is just stupendously good for Najee Harris. Meanwhile, Javonte Williams and the Broncos go to Los Angeles to play the Chargers, Daniel.
I wanted to ask a question.
Please go for it.
Najee Harris. Yeah. Like, is the idea, I know his volume has been phenomenal, but his efficiency has been really poor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happens when you don't draft an offensive lineman until the fourth round third round, and the guy you drafted has already been benched?
I just want to know.
I think Kendrick Green's getting benched this week, if I'm not mistaken. And Dan Moore, their fourth round pick out of Texas A&M, has been not that great. You know something, Daniel, it was and I don't think Steelers fans want us to, you know, lament their offseason once more right now, but I thought it was a little bit of a backwards plan to go with a running back in the first round rather than fortifying the offensive line. I mean, how many good rookie running backs are there this year that aren't first round picks? A lot of them.
Yeah. And you know who did the opposite thing? The Colts.
The Colts, that's right.
Built the offensive line, then spent a second-round pick on a running back, and I'd say that's going pretty well, right? They don't even need a quarterback right now.
And speaking of second-round running backs, how about Javonte Williams, though, right? I mean, for the Broncos, who was a top-of-the-second-round pick, but still a second-round pick, And I think the matchup is just too good to ignore this week, Mike. I just saw what the Texans did to the Chargers. I think there's a chance the Broncos adopt a similar mindset. The Broncos never throw their wide receiver, so the running backs have to be ranked high, right?
Yeah, I can't. It's egregious how little they've gotten out of the receivers. Makes no sense. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I think that this is a whole story, a whole thing I could get into. It doesn't even make sense, and I think it might end up costing them a playoff spot for sure. But nonetheless, they have featured their running backs, and that's good news if you have Javonte Williams and perhaps Melvin Gordon from a fantasy perspective this week. When they played in Week 12, 17 touches, 111 yards, and a touchdown in that game. Believe it or not, Williams, you know, we've talked all season about he's been limited, right? I mean, you have Melvin Gordon. They're basically splitting it even in that backfield. He's still 15th at running back in touches and 10th in yards from scrimmage. I mean, pretty good, right? If there's a knock, it's recently he has 10 or fewer receiving yards in three straight. So we're not getting much out of him in that department. That would certainly help increase his floor, which was the case earlier this season. We're not getting that out of him. He was also outsnapped by Melvin Gordon again last week, which is another detriment to his upside. But he's playing the Chargers, fifth most fantasy points to running backs. You just mentioned it. Rex Burkhead crushed it against them last week. They're top five in carries, rushing yards, yards per carry, touches, and total touchdowns to running backs this season. About as good as a matchup as you can get. So Williams, if you have him, despite some drawbacks, you're starting.
Pick every NFL matchup for a shot at prizes with Pigskin Pick'em, presented by Truly Hard Seltzer. Play at ESPN.com/PigskinPick'em or in the ESPN Fantasy app.
I hear like Broncos fans are like, hey, yeah, but we have these guys signed up in Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick and Jerry Judy, and we'll have Aaron Rodgers next year or something like that. Right. And I'm like, okay,
Wilson, maybe somebody.
Okay. Yeah. But what if you don't? Like, what if you don't have them? Like, what if you're back and you're starting Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Lock or a rookie quarterback next year?
And like, you just invested all that in guys you're not. I just don't understand. Like, you can't even make the case that, well, Sutton's maybe not getting open or very good. Well, then why'd you sign him to the extension to not throw it to him three times a game?
Sure.
I just don't understand why you're not using. You did this on purpose. You spent all these day one and two picks on these skill guys like Jerry Judy and Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant, and you're not using them. And it's your offense is not good. Their offense is getting worse as the season is going on. And I get you want to feature the running backs, but it's going to end up costing them, I think, once. You know, they may miss the playoffs now, and they should be a playoff team with that defense.
New segment alert. It's called Wirefire, and Wirefire is brought to you by Captain Morgan. Bench boring drinks and sub in the captain on game day. Captain Morgan, the official spice rum of the NFL. Hey, Stefania, I'm going to talk about Dare Ogunbowale in just a minute for the Jaguars, but I think it's worth reassuring people that maybe playing dynasty leagues or are wondering what the outlook should be for James Robinson, because a torn Achilles used to be a really scary injury for a player. Not that it's not scary anymore, but there seems to be a much brighter outlook for players coming off of that injury, even at running back.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday, that we're seeing guys come back sooner. I would always remind people as well that timelines are subject to seasonal calendar. So sometimes if a guy tears his Achilles, like let's say it was mid-season this year, and then couldn't return till the start of next year, it could look like a 10 or 11 month recovery. And he might have been ready several months sooner, but could not play sooner because of the calendar. So that's what I mean by seasonal calendar. But we have seen running backs who are returning and returning and looking strong. Deontay Foreman really has bounced back in his career. He actually, after he had the Achilles repair, I think he was playing for the Colts, and he went down with an injury after a game or a game and a half. And people assumed that it was because of the Achilles, and it was like a shoulder injury. And that's what ended up costing him the time. So he was actually came back quite well from that. We've seen Marlon Mack. Now, granted, he hasn't been playing a lot for the Colts, but I watched him in training camp and talked with him then. That's when he was getting his first action when they were scrimmaging with the Panthers and looked really good and had a lot of confidence in his leg. Those are the things that you're looking for. And now Cam Akers is prepared to step on the field potentially this weekend. We don't think he's going to necessarily see a ton of action, but still considering the timeline. And I would encourage people to go look at some of the videos he's posted on his own Instagram account if you want to see how he's moving and judge for yourself. He looks pretty darn good. We'll see how he does in competition. But anyway, all of that sets up James Robinson to be ready close to or at the start of next season. Again, everyone is slightly different, so it depends on the individual, but There's no reason to think he can't make it back and be a top running back again.
Looking forward to seeing him back on the field. The Jaguars obviously have two major running back investments that are going to be rehabbing right now with Travis Etienne with that foot injury. And James Robinson as well off that Achilles. So hopefully they're both okay by the start of next year. In the meantime, they have to play somebody on Sunday against the Patriots, and Dare Ogunbowale is the next man up. Mike, he was a good pass-catching back earlier in his career, kind of a special teamer for the most part, but last week played basically every snap after James Robinson got hurt, and they're probably going to need him on Sunday against the Patriots.
Yeah, we might have a new king of week 16 and 17, because remember, this is 2 years in a row. Remember last year? So yeah. Week 16, he filled in at 17 touches for 78 yards. Week 17, 18 touches for 72 yards. He's right on track with the exact same setup this year at 14 carries and 5-plus targets in both of those games. And this is what we saw last week, right? James Robinson goes down early. Ogunbowale plays 83% of the snaps, 19 touches, 72 yards, and a touchdown against the Jets. Was a very good matchup this week. Tougher matchup going up against New England. But again, we've talked about this before. A team that has allowed a lot to the running back position. Not a lot of touchdowns, but the fourth highest yards per carry. And check this out. They've allowed at least 145 scrimmage yards to the opposing running back room in 10 of their 15 games. The average across the whole season in all 15 games is 153 yards per game to running backs. And if he plays 85% of the snaps again, like last week, which he may, because they don't, you know, they're kind of in desperation mode. Nathan Cottrell and Reichwell Armstead is there, and they just brought in Mekhi Sargent as well, who's been bouncing around the league this year. He very well could play 80% of the snaps again this week. And if he does against this defense, he could have 100 yards and score a touchdown. There's no doubt about it. So I have him ranked 27th right now. That could be a little low. If he's going to be featured, that is going to be a little low. Definitely in the RB2 radar.
I believe he was one of the most popular waiver ads last night off of waivers. Would not surprise me a bit. Moving forward to the Vikings, Stefania, I know it's early in the practice week, so I'm assuming we have no information about Adam Thielen's availability.
Well, we only have Mike Zimmer saying that although Thielen's ankle was sore, you remember he couldn't finish last week's game. I think he only played 23 snaps before he exited after aggravating his ankle injury. He did say that they were hopeful to get him back this week. Hard to know. Again, Mike Zimmer's been optimistic in the past, and then players haven't been available. And then we had Dalvin Cook, where we didn't think he was going to play, and he showed up and had a monster game. So I still think it's too early to tell.
So it sounds like there's a chance of play. There's also a chance he won't play, meaning Adam Thielen. If he doesn't play, Mike, how high would KJ Osborne climb in your ranks?
Well, let's put it this way. The last 4 weeks, he's played at least 79% of the snaps in all four games. Okay. 7-plus targets and 14-plus fantasy points, as well as 3 touchdowns in 3 of those 4 games.
One
dud mix in there. Three games have been really good. He's the number 16 fantasy receiver over the last month.
Excellent.
So he's been pretty good. That tells me at least a wide receiver 3, right? You're going up against the Packers, mid-pack matchup. Their efficiency is outstanding against receivers, much like with the quarterbacks. I talked about this earlier, but teams have to throw on them so much. You're just going to rack up all kinds of volume. So based on his usage as of late, if Thielen's out, he's a guy you're going to want to start. And by the way, when Thielen went down a month or so ago, this is what we expected. We're like, all right, 23-25% of the targets open up. Osborne's already playing a lot, and he's been productive here or there. There's a path to 7 targets a game, and it's gone exactly as we expected, right? So definitely a guy you can consider as a wide receiver 3.
KJ Osborne on the radar from the U by way of the University of Buffalo. Isaiah McKenzie, speaking of Buffalo, for the Bills, was the best player not named Josh Allen on the field this past Sunday against the Patriots. Cole Beasley's been activated from the COVID-19 list, Mike. So is your ranking going to be reflected, or does your current rank of 40th for Isaiah McKenzie bake in the idea that Cole Beasley was playing, or is it under the presumption he would not play?
It was under the assumption that both Gabriel Davis and Beasley were out, but both have been activated. So McKenzie is not startable right now.
So
he was really good last week, and it's a good matchup against Atlanta, but he's going to be their number 5 receiver, and he was barely seeing the field.
Right.
So even if they're like, all right, good game, we're going to get him a few extra plays this week, which is something they've kind of done the last 2 years, right? Yeah. They've always mixed him in for the occasional play. It's not enough volume to consider for your flex. There's way too many better options.
Yeah, I will be interested, though, like not to the point that I'm starting him in fantasy, but I would be interested to see how much more he plays, because Cole Beasley hasn't been Cole Beasley this year, right? I mean, he was so good last year. This year he's been okay, nothing special. Last year was a tremendous season for Cole Beasley. I wonder if Isaiah McKenzie plays a larger role. We'll see.
We'll see. And I could see that, but is that enough to make him a top 45 play?
No, just be more from like a Buffalo Bills offensive standpoint than from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, can't take that risk.
One more here is it's desperate times for the tight ends, pretty much always desperate times for the tight ends. But Gerald Everett for the Seahawks has been pretty good. He's got at least 10 fantasy points in three straight games, and I believe four of his past five, Mike, like been kind of good. Like he's been useful enough to consider maybe.
Yeah, I have him 19th. He's a tight end too, right? He's also been under six targets in three straight games. He has three touchdowns in his last five games, but had none during his prior seven, right? So he's kind of spiked it with touchdowns lately, despite low volume. And that has kind of paid off in fantasy. They're playing the Lions 10th most fantasy points to tight ends. They've struggled a bit as of late, so the matchup's decent, I guess. So if you're in a tough spot, maybe in a 16-teamer, 14-teamer maybe, but you likely have a better option, especially with some other guys that have kind of worked their way into that conversation, like Zach Ertz, who's now a lineup lock with Hopkins out. You know, there's better options.
I feel like you look at the Lions as a team where if you need a streamer, that's not a bad defense to sort of stream against. But what about on the other side of that, where if you need a defense this week, Field, because the Seattle Seahawks, 61% available this week, and the Detroit Lions, as much as I love them, like offense is not what is known as our speciality.
Right. Not right now.
Yeah. Not yet.
Seahawks have been better, more competitive defensively over the past couple of months. Like not great, not Legion of Boom level, but they've been better over the past couple of months. It's been impressive. I think I'd be okay with it, Mike. Like they have generated more pressure. Carlos Dunlap picked his pace up a little bit recently. He wasn't playing a whole lot earlier in the year.
Yeah,
now he's playing
not,
much more. Compared to, like, there was a game where he played like two snaps. Yeah, so he's played a little bit more, at least, compared to that. Mm-hmm. But, like, their leading sacker is 6.5 sacks, like, not a dominant pass rushing team. Secondary is fine, even without Jamal Adams. Like, I think I'm okay with it. What do you think?
Yeah, I have them 13th. So, not a top 12 play, but I'm not super opposed to it. I mean, they're a streaming option. You know, I think other teams you could look at, the Saints going up against Carolina, the Niners have been kind of mid pack in terms of defense special teams going up against Houston, the Eagles against Washington. Chicago against the Giants. Those are some that are probably available who I like more. But again, they're on their radar. And if you're in a deeper league or some of your league mates are holding two defenses, which I always love, by the way.
Yeah.
I love when I'm in 12-team leagues and teams are holding multiple kickers and defenses. So I'm like, that's more skill guys for me that are available, right? Sure. Love that.
Totally.
But those you have some options out there for sure.
Man, I did the Chargers defense thing last week. Didn't work out so well. Playing again against the Houston Texans wasn't my finest hour. Hey, one more piece of news. Like a little bit of an update here. I saw this from John Harbaugh and Stefania. If you have anything you want to add, please do. But he said today that Lamar Jackson will practice on a limited basis, the first time he has practiced in quite some time. Anything to add, Stefania, or just sort of that's the news?
No, I just I retweeted Jameson Hensley with a little eyeball emoji like I'm watching. Because with the bone bruise, the big thing is now that you're testing it a little bit, you want to see what the reaction is. So let's see what he does, and let's see how he looks the next day.
Hopefully,
that will be important.
Hopefully he's back on the field. The Ravens obviously have missed him dearly over the past couple of games. Well, last week, Tyler Huntley was great the week before, but we shall see on Lamar. Daniel.
I know that Stefania is watching and is always watching for injuries to be able to make sure that we have all of the latest information at Stefania_ESPN. One of the things that I'm watching for this week is to figure out whether or not Cooper Kupp can have 230 receiving yards to be able to break Calvin Johnson's receiving record in the same amount of games.
Right, that's a good question. So this is like, I think the answer is maybe. I mean,
230 is a lot.
That's a lot. That's like a historical game.
I'll take the under. Anyone want to bet? Anyone want to bet on that?
I got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Like, are you even going to recognize records that are broken in 17 games? Or, like, are you going to not recognize them now and 10 years from now maybe recognize them?
It depends. Context for everything. It's not going to be hard to do the math and say, well, he beat the record by 1 yard, but he played an extra game. Plus, guys are missing so many games, too, that they're still going to play.
Kind of like the Jalen Waddle thing, right?
Jalen Waddle is...
He's the good example, right? Because he missed the one game, so it will be exactly 16. It's hard to tell, right? Because, it's like the COVID asterisk. I mean, you know, there's so many things that are different in the last year or two.
I just think it's different.
It is. It's different. An adjustment. But, you know, at some point, people shattered all the records because we jumped from 14 to 16 games. And, no one says, you know, that's the record for players with only 16 games played. Right?
I just said Calvin Johnson was the leader in receiving yards, not even thinking about the idea that football was 14 games for. And, like, I totally... That's a great point, Field. Like, give it 25 years, we'll probably be there, but I don't know.
Where does stats and info land? Like, to me, like, they're the go-to, because everything's, like, in the modern era of football, right? We always talk about the modern era, and that's, everything's categorized, so I would default to them.
I mean, remember what Matthew was telling me once about how he drafts it. You guys, I didn't even say anything.
We already know the joke. We didn't even make it. We already know where you're going. Where you're
from modern era.
When he drafted Otto Graham in his, you know, 6-week schedule, right? Yeah, the Cleveland Browns went 6-0 in the 1932 regular season. Matthew crushed it that year.
Pop Maroon's year.
Yeah.
I want to close out this year because it's just for me. This is our last podcast of the year.
Oh, my God.
We're off Thursday and Friday because I want everybody, again, to be able to have time for the holidays to hopefully spend with their families.
Yeah.
Being safe you know, being careful with everything. But one thing I really want to watch this weekend, and I realize I just talked about it with Cooper Kupp. I think it's so awesome as somebody that has been a Matthew Stafford fan for so long for the Detroit Lions when he was surrounded by people that just made his entire career difficult.
Yeah.
To have two of the greatest wide receiver seasons ever with two different wide receivers. I'm super excited to watch that.
Yeah, and you know who else is super excited about that, right?
Mama Dop.
Mama Dop, who's the best.
You know, of course, very excited. This is a non sequitur, but I do think it's important to acknowledge the passing of John Madden yesterday. Yes. And I would highly recommend the documentary All Madden, directed by our former colleague Tom Rinaldi. And it's going to be airing on ESPN Plus. I just learned. Yeah. So check your programming schedule, because if you're a fan of football history, you will love all the folks who are represented in the documentary. And it really, like, for some of us who grew up with John Madden was an icon in the Bay Area because of his coaching time with the Raiders. So I got a lot of John Madden in my life, but really he made football, I think, one of the things that's important, and it's translated to why fantasy football is so accessible. He made football accessible to so many people with his storytelling and explanations and demonstrations on his Telestrator when he was calling games as well. So I would say if you are interested, check it out.
Not to mention his name on the video game franchise forever. I mean, the guy is
seriously
a legend. I grew up with Pat Summerall and John Madden. Yeah. I know a lot of people have been saying that the past few days, but I still miss that group, and I can't believe they're both gone. I mean, they're awesome. And last night I pulled out all of my Madden video games from over the years, because they just pile up, right? You just keep them. And I was like, wow, I have them going back to when I was a kid, when I was 10. I mean, I think the first one was Madden 95 that I had in the picture that I put on social media. I mean, I was 10, and I have games going all the way up to recent years. I mean, now they're digital codes, right? Yeah. But going through all the different, from PlayStation 2 to Xbox 360 to PS3 and PS4, like, it's unbelievable. And people just know his name. They don't even, there's kids that have never heard him broadcast a game and know who he is just from that franchise. So, hopefully they put his face on, for the first time in a long time, put his face on the game next year, which would be an awesome dedication.
There's a lot of that Twitter petition going around.
Yeah,
I think they'll
do that.
Love it. There's a fantastic piece on ESPN.com by Ryan Hawkinsmith that has all these lovely anecdotes, a couple of which you may know, you may not know. Did you guys know that the yellow first down line, that was John Madden's idea, because he was diagramming plays in a production meeting and was like, why don't we just put a line where the first down is? That would be so much more helpful. Did you know that, I think many people know that John Madden took a bus everywhere he went because he had a fear of flying. The way that came to be was, there was a week in which John Madden had to call a game in Atlanta on Sunday. He had to be in Vegas Wednesday, and he had to be back in D.C. on Sunday. It was too hard to find cars and trains to take him to where he needed to go. So CBS, where he was working at the time, cobbled together the money to rent a bus for a week. Which bus did they rent? Dolly Parton's tour bus.
It's actually, that's in the dock, and you can see the original bus, and you meet his bus driver.
That's awesome. It is so
phenomenal.
It's really cool.
I was just going to say, like, just the players who are in this thing, you've got to say Lawrence Taylor. I mean, him talking about Madden making him a better player, that he actually cared about how he played, because if he knew John Madden was calling the game, he knew he was watching. And so stuff like that, it's just... Man, if you love football, it's so good.
And
so good.
People love, like, people know some plays now. Four verts, all go special, cover two, right? Like, you know, zone blitzes, things that people know from playing Madden.
I freaking have learned so much about football literally from playing Madden, because they teach you how to read defenses. They give you diagrams of what all of these different things are, and that you literally can learn the game of football that way, which is so rad. I loved, Madden used to be the commentator in the video game as well. And I miss being able to hear John Madden. I remember he had a quote where he was like, oh, sometimes the worst the worst place to hit a wide receiver is in the hands. And I'm always, every time I like watch somebody drop a football, I always like hear back to that like Madden quote when that so happens. Like, I wish that was still in the video game. But
so
anyways.
Much goodness from the great John
Such
Madden.
Such a great man.
And I don't know that legend even comes close to encapsulating
no
what
way.
John Madden yeah. means to football.
He is football.
Yeah, he is football. So
yeah. Shout out to Tenactin, by the way.
Tough acting.
Tough acting.
That and the yeah. old light beer yeah. when he like charged through the thing. You know, yeah. less
so
filling
good.
Tastes great. Oh,
so
my
good.
God, so good.
Before we say goodbye, I guess Daniel mentioned we'll talk to you next week. A big thank you to everybody who has listened to this podcast and made it what it has been so far this season. We wish you all a very safe and healthy and happy new year. We cannot wait to talk to you guys in 2022. We appreciate you more than you know. For Daniel and Stefania and Mike, I am Field. Happy birthday, Matthew. We'll talk to you guys on Monday.
Peace happy new year.
Out. Peace out.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady, out there hustling for us with advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.